a lot of people here. It's good to see you. And the thing I think all of us know is none of us are immune to grief. I mean, that's that thing that we all go through at some point or another in our lives. And so to be able to talk about that with you, I feel like we already have kind of a common bond because we've all experienced grief. Psalm 147:3 says, "He, the Lord, heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds." I have so many papers here. I almost needed like a whole... Oh, here it is. Isaiah 43, 1 through 3. "But now thus says the Lord, He who created you, O Jacob, He who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I've called you by name. You are mine. When you..." Not if you, right? Not you might. "But when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire..." Again, when you walk through the fire, "you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior." That we can trust. But it doesn't ever tell us that we're not going to go through grief and we're not going to go through hard times. Grief is that process that we go through to adjust to the loss of anything that's important in our life. It could be a job loss. It can be a divorce. It can be the death of someone you like, love. It can be a health issue. It can be rebellious children issue. It can be dealing with addictions in your family. I know for Hal and I, we have walked through the death of parents. We have walked through pretty intense rebellion from our children. We've walked through a heart attack. We've walked through open heart surgery. We have walked through the death of a business. There's been an enormous amount that we have walked through, and still, looking back, thankfully, we are able to say that God walked with us through all of it. But it's hard. It's hard to walk through it. Here's what happens when you deal with grief. First of all, I want to show you. So one of the things that I do at the seminary is I teach play therapy. And so I love little visual examples. So I've got visual examples tonight that y'all are going to have to do. You're going to have to participate in this. But here's what happens. So look, this is a jar. Those of you in the back, you might not be able to see it, but it's a jar. And this part is somewhat clear, and this part is kind of mucky. Got it? You see it? Everybody see it? Yeah? Okay. So when grief comes or when a trauma comes, what happens is, and notice, there's mucky stuff at the bottom of the jar, right? But why is that? Well, because we're all sinners, and we're all part of a sinful place that we live, and so we have an accumulation of junk. Every single person in this room has an accumulation of junk, whether you want to admit it or not. That's fine. And what happens is grief comes, and this whole thing gets shaken up. Right? That's what happens with grief. I mean, it just shakes up all the yuck that's kind of at the bottom of that jar. And we're affected by that. We're affected psychologically. So there's sometimes our view of God is affected. We'll talk about that. Sometimes our philosophy of life is affected. We go numb. Sometimes people get kind of hyper sometimes. We'll talk about some depression that happens with grief. Sometimes we're very irritable, impatient. Physically, we're exhausted. I remember when my mom died, and she died like the day after after Christmas, and so we did all of her funeral. And then I came back and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go right back to work and I'm just fine. And I was beat. I was just exhausted. And normally, I don't, you can't see that, but I'm pretty energetic. I don't lose energy, but I had no energy. I was done. That's what grief does. Grief is, like I said, emotionally exhausting. It's irrational. It's unpredictable. It can shake the very foundation of what you've lived through. It's just hard. And the amount of work your grief requires kind of depends on where you are in life and the type of loss and whatever else is on your plate at that time. There's something called complicated grief. Complicated grief is when there's multiple layers of grief. Let me give you an example. A friend of mine several years ago had a twin sister who died. And she went through months, years of trying to fight the cancer, you know, did some natural things, went to Mexico to fight the cancer, all kinds of things. But she died, and this was a twin, like identical twin. And what she didn't realize was this. There's really a lot of complicating factors that people just didn't get. They couldn't understand the loss of a twin that was so close to you. Or here's another example. What if you've lost your job, right? And then on top of that, your best friend, for whatever reason, has pretty much just left your life, and you're in a car accident, and in that car accident, you actually hurt somebody. It's a lot of complicating grief issues, right? But sometimes we don't take that into account. It's a lot of grace when you can look at people and you can understand there's a lot of complications going on with grief, and you need to be able to talk through all of them. So that just goes hand in hand with grief. A sudden unexpected loss is usually more traumatic, more disruptive, and it takes a lot of time to get used to that. This year, we have had some unexpected losses in our country, right? We've had mudslides. We've had hurricanes. Last year, hurricanes. Just so many tragic events that were happening. And if you know someone who's lost someone through violence, through any kind of violence, that's more traumatic and it's more disruptive in the life of people. So just take that into account. You may lose trust in your own ability to make decisions or trust others. It just goes hand in hand with dealing with grief. There's Stages of Grief by Kubler-Ross that many of you probably know. Any of you heard of Kubler-Ross? Yep? Okay. Let me go through these stages of grief just to kind of normalize this for you, because the reality is you do kind of lose your ability to make decisions. Think about this jar right here, right? So when it got shaken up, see, it was kind of clear, and then it got all shaken up, and what happened? Well, it's not clear yet. You don't need to make decisions when this is not clear. You need to understand it takes time. And so here's these stages of grief. First one is shock and denial. What in the world has just happened to me? How could this have happened? How could I have been fired from this job that I thought I was so good at? How could this happen? Or, how could my teenager do what they chose to do? I thought I had done everything right. How could they do that? So that's that denial and that shock. And that lends itself to hopelessness, despair. Sometimes you go numb. You withdraw, kind of disoriented. Can't really make decisions because you can't see very clearly to make decisions. It happens in grief. Another symptom is anger. Another stage is anger. Anger is just deep frustration, anxiety, irritation, and it just comes out all over the place. And it's important for those of you who deal with people that are grieving to understand that that happens when people are grieving, and you need to listen to them, and you need to come alongside them, and they may react to you, but that's okay. That's a stage of where they are. So give them some grace. Another symptom is bargaining or imposed guilt on yourself. How many of you have felt guilt when someone dies? After someone dies? You know, my mom died. And I missed her so much, but I felt guilt because all I could think about was she lived in Orlando, I live in Jackson, I didn't go see her enough. It's crazy how we impose guilt on ourselves when somebody dies or when we're experiencing grief. And it's good to look at that and understand that. We feel guilt. And then the last stage is depression. And y'all are going to be talking about depression, I'm thinking, eventually. But depression, here's some symptoms of depression. A tremendous sense of loss. Huge sense of loss. It's like, you know, if you go through a divorce, it's like an appendage has been cut off. Deep grief. Huge sense of loss. Despair. Hopelessness. Sometimes thoughts of suicide. Normal routines of life are very difficult. You lose a lot of energy to even perform the simplest task. And there becomes sort of a little interest in others. You really don't care what other people are doing. And that's just another stage of grief. And it's good for you to hear that because the reality is all of us are going to grieve at one time or another. So sometimes it's good to know these are components. It goes right with the grief cycle, which I'm going to show you in a minute. There is a whole cycle. And then the last stage is acceptance. Acceptance of the loss, whatever the loss might be, is you're actively beginning to move on. You're no longer consumed with despair or hopelessness. It doesn't mean the grief is gone, right? Because grief is kind of like the waves of the ocean. You know, they come in and they overtake you, and then they go out, and then they come in. And that's what grief is like, even when you get to the acceptance stage. But there is a renewed interest in self, in other people, activities, life in general. I have a graph here. Some of you can't see this. I'll see if I can go over it. But this is from Norman Wright's book on crisis and grief and trauma. And he talks about the fact that there is this normal phase that you need to go through when you're dealing with grief. And the first phase is, should I stay and face it or should I withdraw? You're numb, you're disoriented, your insight ability is limited, you feel overwhelmed. You search for what you lost. And you reminisce. That's that first stage. And this is really helpful for people who are dealing with grief because sometimes they feel like they're crazy. Like, these thoughts that I'm dealing with, I've never dealt with this before. And then you dip down. And you hit this emotional level. And sometimes that's days to weeks to months after the whatever it is that you're grieving happens. And usually there's intense emotion or you feel absolutely drained. Sometimes you feel angry, sad, fearful, anxious, depressed. Your thinking ability is limited. Think about it. When you dip down, your thinking ability is going to be limited. And you begin bargaining, wishful thinking, and you're just absolutely confused with life. And then months later, your positive thoughts begin to return. You're able to problem solve. You begin looking for something else to invest in. And you're able to stay focused again. That's hopeful, right? And then months, maybe a year later, hope returns. You're more self-confident. Thinking is clearer. As this begins to settle, you'll see you can look through it. Progress is evident. New attachments are made. You may want to stop and evaluate where you've been and where you're going. Okay, so that's just that normal crisis pattern, grief pattern that we go through. Assumptions about fairness, life order, religious beliefs are often challenged. Right? Is God really good? Why did this happen? Why did this happen this way? It doesn't make any sense. And sometimes there's anger with God, right? And there's a great, see if I have time to read it. Piper has a great blog that he did on this. He said, words for the wind. And you know, Piper's kind of, you know, he's this big dog, right? When I think of Piper, I think he's big. But he says this. Do you think that you can reprove words when the speech of a despairing man is wind? Job 6:26. In grief and pain and despair, people often say things they otherwise would not say. They paint reality with darker strokes than they will paint it tomorrow when the sun comes up. They sing in minor keys and talk as though that's the only music. They see clouds only and speak as if there was no sky. They say, where is God? There's no use to go on. Nothing makes any sense. Or there's no hope for me. Or if God were good, this could not have happened. So what do we do with these words? All of us really love the Lord. You know, and for whatever reason, I think that I should defend God sometimes. But Job says we don't need to reprove them. These words are wind, or literally for the wind. They will be quickly blown away. There will come a turn in circumstances, and the despairing person will waken from the dark night and regret their hasty words. Therefore, the point is, let's not spend our time and energy reproving these words. They will be blown away of themselves in the wind. One need not clip the leaves in autumn. It's a wasted effort. They will blow off by themselves. Great picture, right? I mean, they're going to blow away. Oh, how quickly we're given to defending God, or sometimes the truth, from words that are only for the wind. It's just for the wind. If we had discernment, we could tell the difference between the words with roots and the words blowing in the wind. These are words with roots in deep error and deep evil, but not all gray words get their color from a black heart. Some are colored mainly by the pain, the despair, and what you hear is not the deepest thing within. There is something real and dark within where they come from, but it's temporary, like a passing infection, real painful, but not the true person. So we need to discern whether the words spoken against us or against God or against the truth are just for the wind, spoken not from the soul, but from the sore. And if they're for the wind, let us wait and not reprove. Restore the soul, don't reprove the sore, is the aim of our love. I like that. So we hit these places where people have questions about God. And I think what Piper is trying to help us see is God will defend God. Be that safe person. Be that person that can come alongside someone who's grieving and be a presence in their life, right? Because that's what they want. They don't want somebody constantly telling them what to do or how to do it, or comparing them to other people that are grieving, or telling your own story. There's some things not to say to a grieving person. Ready? I know how you feel. How do you know what they feel? You don't know how they feel. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Be happy for what you have left. You're going to get over it. Life needs to go on. You're going to feel better before you know it. Come on. Come on. It's time to move on. I'm sure this is never, ever going to happen again. Ever. Well, how in the world do you know that something this traumatic isn't going to happen again? Don't let this rob you of your joy. People are robbed of joy for a minute when they're grieving. It is a deep, dark place to be. It's hard. And then the big thing is stay away from your own stories or any comparisons with them. That's real important for us to remember when we're dealing with people that are grieving. Remember that there are certain triggers in your life that are going to be active when you're grieving the loss of someone. How many of you remember what it smelled like in August when Katrina hit? I mean, I can go outside in August still, and I smell it, and I'll even tell Hal, I'll say, it smelled like when Katrina hit. You know, I see the little love bugs coming in, and that's just like, I don't know, there's triggers all over the place. And so there, just remember, there's triggers. There's anniversaries. There's just those smells that come along with remembering grief and sights and seasons and climate. So just understand that and give yourself grace in that. Sometimes there is a sense when you're grieving or when something has been lost that you have no control in life. And guess what? We really don't, right? We don't. That's a hard place to be. Those of us that are older, we get that. We don't control outcomes always, right? We can't control choices our kids make. I couldn't control whether Hal would have a heart attack. I couldn't control all the different things that cause grief. I couldn't control when my mom died, how she died, totally out of my control. And so there's this huge sense when you're grieving that I don't have control in my life. You may find that it's really hard to work, because work sometimes is just overwhelming, and you've got to make decisions, and you've got to move, and you may find, whew, work is really hard for me right now. I can't seem to do it. It's good for you to remember grief is distracting, and so it means you're going to be more accident prone. Just giving you kind of nuts and bolts of grief. How many of you that have been grieving have gone into a grocery store and literally stood in the store? Of course, I do this now, but that's just old age. But you stand in the store and you just stand there like, I know I came in here for some reason and I cannot remember what I came here to buy. Was it milk? You know, was it butter? I mean, that's not all grief. Seriously, I do that now. But it also is, it goes with grief because you lose your ability to sort through things well. You are accident prone. And the object of grieving is not to get over the loss or recover from the loss, but to get through the loss, right? You want to get through to the other side of the loss. I don't want to read to you, but at the same time, I do kind of want to read to you because there's some good things out there. I'm going to read to you something entitled Permission Granted, It's Okay Not to Be Okay. The other day, I received a permission slip from a friend who's walked a torn-up road and refuses to let me walk mine alone. I will always love her for it. She texted me, "You have full permission to use this pass whenever you need it." And it had a picture of a woman lying in the bed with the caption, "It's I'll be okay, just not today." What a sweet pass. I needed that picture and those words. I needed somebody to give permission and sprinkle compassion over my heart. Compassion is when someone enters another's suffering and resides there with them. It's not a to-do list, an expectations list, how to get better in 12 steps list. No lists, no rules, no deadlines, just a warm body entering your road, grabbing your hand, and saying to your heart, "You're not alone, and I'm not going anywhere." Compassion, while not entirely understanding another's pain, remember, we don't fully understand, but compassion is vulnerable and humble enough to embrace the pain and offer hope. And often we're terrible at giving each other permission to grieve, to be sad, to be broken, to struggle, to cry, to not have it all together, and be kind of a dysfunctional mess. We're not good at giving permission for people to do that. It makes us kind of feel uncomfortable. But just like we said at the beginning, we all have experienced grief. It is not a respecter of persons. It hits everyone. And sometimes we need a green light to be sad. Especially in the church, y'all. I mean, I'm adding my little addendum here. She didn't say that. I'm saying that. You know, is it okay to be sad? Or do we, you know, have to rustle ourselves up and put on that good face when we're not in a good place? Is it okay? I've struggled through the grief cycle a few times in 32 years. She's young writing this. I said goodbye to two grandparents before age 11, held my husband's then fiancé's hand as he said goodbye to his only brother, gasped for air through my best friend's memorial service at 21, and 2 short years ago watched my mom breathe her last breath. Grief is no stranger in our house. We talk about her with raw emotion. We explain to our 4 children how she can make you cry for no reason or feel tired, so tired. We talked about how grief is a sacred journey. We're all called to travel. I can look out in this room. We are all called to travel this road. We talk about the opportunities we have every day to love grieving people. We're honest with our kids about our heart's condition by saying, "I'm sad today, I'm afraid today, I'm cranky today, I feel safe today, I'm content today, I'm excited today." No question about death, grief, pain, or struggle is ever turned away in the protected walls of our home. We duke it out with our feelings. We speak truth. Sometimes the truth traps us, lies to us, holds us in bondage. So we need to understand grief. We need to familiarize ourselves with grief so we can understand it more clearly. There are people in your life who need a permission slip today. Sometimes all it takes is one person reaching out and saying, "It's going to be okay, maybe not today, though." Would you be bold enough, humble enough, vulnerable enough to give a permission slip today? And it might be you that needs the permission slip, because I don't know you all. I don't know your stories. I've been y'all sitting in a room listening to somebody talk while my heart is broken inside. Would you be bold enough, humble enough, vulnerable enough to give a permission slip today? It might be you that needs the permission slip. So here it is. With the best words anyone ever spoke to me regarding pain, struggle, grief, and life, they're words my mother spoke during one of her darkest periods of life. She said, "You can go there, so you have permission to feel. You just can't camp there. So you can't just stay there. And she says, here's your permission slip. So that is that reality is grieving is not just the ability to get over the loss, but to get through the loss. How do we get through the loss? Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, the most beautiful people are those who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and have found their way out of the depths. Tim Keller says, the strongest souls are the ones that have emerged out of suffering. Isn't that amazing? Those are the strong ones. And the most massive characters are the ones that have been seared with scars. That's an amazing quote. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I would like to avoid suffering at all costs. It's not something I enjoy. I don't like grief. Hal can vouch for it. I will avoid it if at all possible. But it is that thing that makes us stronger. First Corinthians 1:3-7 says, 2 Corinthians 1:3-4 says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, not some, all, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So why do we all have to deal with grief? Well, because God is with us in the grief, and in the grief, we can then comfort others who also are going through grief. You know, how many of you, well, you don't have to show me your hands, but if you have rebellious children, right? I'll just use that as an example. How many of you feel really comfortable going to somebody whose children are perfect in every way and have never done anything wrong? I'm not. No way. But I'm pretty good at going to somebody. If they've gone through some stuff, I'm good going to them, right? Why? Well, because they've been through it. So we've been through it, but we don't always show it to people. So that's that grief. That is, how do we look back on what we've experienced and discover that this grief actually keeps teaching us new things about life, right? Our understanding of life just gets deeper and deeper. I'm going to get Billy or somebody to pass out. Remember I told you I'm a play therapist, so you're going to have kind of I want you to look at something and I want you to circle it, okay? Circle little aspects of it. It's coming your way, but while they're passing that out, I want to talk a little bit about balloons. You know, when a balloon has never been blown up, it's just tight, right? It takes a lot more effort to blow up a balloon that's never been blown up. Y'all with me? But when you blow up a balloon, it kind of stretches it out, right? Well, that's what grief does to us. We often are like a nice, tight little balloon. And then grief comes and just blows the balloon up. And the next time you blow up the balloon, it's easier to blow up the balloon. Why? Well, because it's been stretched. Well, that's what happens to us as we grieve. That allows us then, when we look at the 2 Corinthians passage, to understand, oh, I get it. So, he comforts us in our affliction, so that we can comfort others who are in affliction with the comfort that we've been comforted with. Right? think all of you have the grief ball, right?
Well, most of them do.
Most everybody has the grief ball.
We're
not everybody.
We're making more confident.
Okay. Well, I'm going to explain to those of you that have the grief ball. When you look at that, you're going to see, oh, so many emotions, right? There's a massive amount of emotions that go with grief. Some that you wouldn't even think goes with grief. Like, how in the world does relief, there's this little part at the bottom of the grief ball, and it's relief. I don't know about y'all, but that when you look at that and you think, really? Relief? But you know what? I remember when my mom died from pancreatic cancer and I was watching her suffer for weeks. There was absolute relief when the Lord took her home. So, yeah, there's so many multitude of emotions that we feel. So what I want you to do, I'm going to get you to do a little work. If you've got a pen, if you don't have a pen, just look at the words. Think about all of the different emotions that go with grief. And I want you to just ponder that. Good. How many of you in the midst of grief felt one, only one of these emotions? Just one. How many of you felt five? How many of you felt six? Seven, eight. You can go on. You get anxiety, confusion, panic, rage, depression, rejection, all of that. It just goes hand in hand with grief. And what I love is it's like this ball of yarn. It's all wound up. It's hard to untangle that. You know what it takes? To untangle that is you need someone you can talk to when you're dealing with grief. You need, so what I tell the people with M&A who muck out the houses and build the sheds of hope, I tell them, you know what? What you need more than anything is just to be a presence in these people's lives. If they're just standing there looking up in the air like, what in the world has just happened to me? Just be a presence in their life. Be somebody who can be that safe person that somebody who's grieving can unpack all of these emotions. Even maybe relief, crazy as that may be. There's a lady who said, I'm indebted to friends who let me weep and vent without analyzing me or judging me. Trying to fix people only deepens their grief. Unsolicited advice feels like criticism. Unsolicited advice feels like criticism. I don't know if y'all have ever experienced that. I have. Kind of feels like they're being critical. It hurts to be told that others are thriving under the same circumstances and then to get suggestions on what to do differently. Whew. Everybody's healing is unique, and those comparisons often make the wound even deeper. Remind people grieving that their faithful Savior will never fail or forsake them. He's not reproving them, but he will never fail them. And that Jesus walks with them and weeps with them. Remember, he knows every detail of their struggle. Remind them that for all of us, the unshakable hope of Christ, and he will be with us forevermore, even though we don't feel that right now. All right, I'm going to open it up for questions.
All right, Lord, we've got a couple here to start with. Get my time to work. Here's one. Let me ask the second one first. When is it appropriate to move beyond being quiet with a hurting friend and offering words of comfort?
Great question. I think the best thing is to ask your friend. I remember when my dad was dying, a lady came and she just sat there for a long time and she said, my three sisters were around, actually two at that time. She said, I would love to share some scripture with you. Are you okay with that? And actually, I wanted it. I wanted it. And so we all said, absolutely, yes. But I think asking, is this a good time just to encourage you? I'd love to encourage you some way. And then get their permission.
Okay. Along with that, what are some examples of helpful, empathic responses to somebody else's grief?
Mm-hmm.
What could be said?
I know you miss your dad. Would you like to tell me a little bit about your dad? I'd love to hear. It is that, how do you come alongside somebody and let them tell their story, right? So it's questions to let them tell their story. What was it like for you, Barb, when Hal had his heart attack? You know, what do you remember about that? What stands out for you? What was it like for you to experience that feeling that you couldn't stop this thing from happening that was happening? Does that make sense? So you want to be, here's a good comparison. So a lot of times, Think about driving in Atlanta with traffic going like crazy and there's exhaust and it's stinky and you're just stuck in traffic, right? That is not a comfortable place to be. But think about sitting by a stream, you're in this really pretty field and there's a stream going by. That feels pretty good. It doesn't feel good to be in Atlanta traffic, but it feels really good just to be relaxed and sitting by a stream. That's what a grieving person needs, and those questions that you ask are those calming questions that allow them to tell their story. I hope that answers. I mean, I don't have specific questions.
Here's one. What are some signs that grief has become a depression that may require professional help?
Yeah, when I talked about the complicated grief, that's some components of that. And sometimes there are people who you're watching them and they tend to spend a lot of time in their room alone. And they're kind of unkept. They're not eating well. They have no interest in what they used to have interest in. And I'm not talking about the normal grief cycle. I'm talking about this has gone on for quite a while. Those are times when you begin to see there's something else possibly going on here. Wonder if I could encourage them to go to talk to someone at this point. Because goodness gracious, We have those complicating factors in our life. And so, but yeah, that's a great question. Kind of keep your eyes out and watch and see. And if you see ongoing dips, it's time for them maybe to talk to a professional.
Well, along with that, you mentioned earlier even thoughts of suicide mm-hmm. among people who are deep in grief. How do we spot that? What are signs that somebody is
suicidal?
Maybe right to that point, mm-hmm. seriously contemplating taking
life? Sometimes they'll say it, and that's good for us. You never, ever want to, if somebody says, I just don't want to live anymore, I'm tired of it, I'm sad, I'm down all the time, life is just dark. A good question to ask, but we often avoid, is, are you thinking about taking your life? Do you mean that? Do you have a plan? Have you thought about what you're going to do? We usually don't. I think for many of us, we tend to avoid just going there. But if you see somebody beginning to give away their things, I don't need these things anymore, and you begin to see they really have just lost touch with what's going on with life, and they're beginning to talk about just the emptiness and the, you know, I just don't want to put up with this anymore, you can ask them, are you thinking about killing yourself? And I would do it. You don't have to avoid that.
Good, thank you. Different question here. Is it easier to get through a public grief, like the death of a loved one, than it is a more personal, private grief? It may not be so clearly
known. Yeah, grief is grief, and everybody feels it differently. I would say that I've talked to enough people that those hard, non-public grief things that's really hard to connect with others and even tell them about it, that's really tough, y'all, because there's so much shame often covering all of it. But those public ones, when my dad died, when my mom died, sad as that was, and that was very sad, but everybody was embracing me with that one, right? Oh, Barb, I'm so sorry. Your dad was such a wonderful man. What a great guy. I know this has been hard. But it's some of those other things that you don't know. Who's gonna walk through this with me? This feels a little bit heavy, and it's very embarrassing, and I don't know exactly who I can share this with. Those are hard. But everybody's different, right? So everybody's relationship with their family is different. I would say death of children would be unbearably difficult. So I don't know that I can qualify. I just know they're all hard.
Good. Thank you. You've quoted lots of sources in your talk tonight. Are there some favorite resources that you like to pass on to people related to enduring grief,
mm-hmm.
grief?
Yep. Keller has a book, Walking with God Through Grief and Suffering. That's a great one. There's another wonderful book called, I wish I had known you were going to ask that question.
Blame it on me.
Ah, see, this is like going to the grocery store, and I can't remember why I went there. It's exactly like that. I'm sitting here, and I can see the book. It's blue. I can send that information to Billy, and you guys can get it from him, but it's wonderful. It's a great book. It's a book written by a professor whose wife and children and mother-in-law were all in the car with him. He had been ministering on some kind of reservation out west. And he was driving home, and he was hit by a drunk driver, and his mother-in-law, his wife, and I think one or two of his children all died, and then he wrote this book. So, yeah, it's a good one.